Hey, Hound Dogs, I'm David Hankins.
And I'm Paul Hankins.
And welcome to On the Air with Power Squared, a weekly look behind what we hope will be everyone's favorite comic book, Power Squared. This week we have with us a special guest, Philip Lee, who is the creator of Baguette Robot. Hello, Philip.
Hey, hello. Hey. Nice to be here.
We were talking, you're up in Foster City, so we're same time zone, that's good.
Yeah, that helps, yeah.
Yeah. I always feel bad trying to hit people on the East Coast at 6 o'clock. Well, it's 9 o'clock on a Friday. It's probably not the best time. But anyway, 6 o'clock on a Friday
is
pretty good. So we actually, I guess, sort of met on the Artith Merrick Zoom call months ago when they were doing trying to get some of the creators together. And so we have your first issue of Baguette Robot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That takes me back.
So you were telling us you're actually originally from Ireland.
I grew up in Ireland, Dublin, on the East Coast, and I've always been interested in art. So even as a kid, I'd always had a pencil in my hand, mm-hmm. and I would just draw pictures. And I think the first time I ever got money for my art was in first class. So it's probably first grade here. I drew a picture of a butterfly, and my teacher gave me 5 pence. So I got 5 pennies for my first piece of art.
Well, there you go.
And I went, this is great. This is going to be a good lifestyle. But, went downhill after that. So I've always been interested in art and read a lot of comic books when I was younger. Because I was in Ireland, mostly it was from the English. Got a lot of English comics.
Right.
That was a big influence, especially 2000 AD. I've been reading that since 77. So they celebrated their 44th anniversary this week. So that's been going around a while.
Pretty impressive. What is that about, 2000 AD?
It's an anthology. So it's a weekly comic, and it's come out weekly since 77. Mm-hmm. And it's the only time it stopped was when there was a print and strike. Mm-hmm. But the stories are science fiction. They could be, there's another one. There's a character called Slane, which he's an Irish warrior, which is a good one. He's an Irish version of Conan, mm-hmm. which is written by Pat Mills. That was my favorite story. Judge Dredd. So Judge Dredd is the most popular character. He's famous from that.
Yeah.
Judge Dredd, and well, Rogue Trooper, they're turning that into a movie at the moment. Hmm. Tons of characters, and it was really well written, and the artwork was really good. Brian Boland was started off in there, became famous. Brendan McCarthy, Steve Dillon. So a lot of the characters, they would start off in 2000 AD, and then they would go off to Vertigo, to the US market, and they'd go on and do their own thing. So Grant Morrison was there as well. He started there, Peter Milligan. So it's a good, they would test their stuff there, the writing and the art.
Okay.
And then they'd be picked up by DC or Marvel and come over here.
Is that what got you interested in doing a comic book?
The weird thing with me was that I never wanted to do a comic book. I was more, and I still am, I'm more interested in the newspaper strips, mm-hmm. like the old Peanuts.
Yeah.
Haggard the Horrible, The Wizard of Id,
yeah.
those type of Mother Goose and that's the stuff I wanted to do. But this is pre-internet, so it was really hard to, you draw some stuff on a piece of paper, but then what do you do with it? you can't send it anywhere. Who is this? There's nowhere to go. There's no Google. You can't who's the editor of this? So I would just doodle all the time, and I never really thought I'd be a comic book artist. I was more interested in the newspaper side of things, which is a dying industry, which is it's sad because that used to be my favorite part of the newspaper.
Yeah,
would be to open up the comics page.
Yeah,
of course. And then the first time I saw Calvin and Hobbes, I was just blown away. There was a newspaper in Ireland, and they relaunched with a comic section, 8-page comic section, 1982. But they had Calvin and Hobbes, and it was half the page.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. I just fell in love with it. And then I went to art college. I studied animation, graphics, printmaking, filmmaking, and drama. So it was quite broad.
Wow.
And never really thought I'd ever do comic books. And it was only like in the last 4 years that I started drawing comics. So it was like a weird gap. So I would read comics all the time, and then I just draw, but I just put them in a box somewhere, or just,
Right.
in a folder. And there was one time, I think back in like 92, I sent some samples off to an English magazine called Deadline. And it was this character called Anorak Jack was his name. And that was like my first attempt at like a 4-panel gag strip. And I always remember the editor, he actually wrote back to me and he said, he goes, yeah, your stuff is very esoteric. And he's like, he's let me down. He's like, your stuff is really esoteric, but he said, don't give up. But your stuff is not right for this magazine. But he said, just keep trying. And I always thought that was really good. It was good. But it was esoteric. I mean, a lot of the stuff, my stuff is like, people are just like, I don't know what you're talking about at the time. My when I showed this some of the scripts and the strips to my wife, she's like, yeah, it looks good, but I don't understand it. I'm like, okay. So fast forward, I came to America, won a green card in the lottery, so I decided to take a chance and come over to America. And I traveled around California for a while. But I would doodle on pieces of paper, and I would doodle on it. So I got an iPad and I would doodle on the iPad. And then I started to post stuff on Instagram. Back in 2012 was the first time I posted stuff. And but there's no rhyme or reason. There was just like characters, sketches. There was no cartoons as such. And what happened was in 2017, I was walking to work one morning, and it was a really stormy day, and this car drove through the pedestrian crossing, and he hit me.
Oh.
So I got whacked by this car, and I ended up in hospital. And the two doctors came in to the ER and checked me out, and they were like, "There's nothing wrong with you. Like we don't know what happened. Like you got hit by a car."
Yeah.
And he said, "You're really lucky. There's no bones broken. There's no damage to the head." So they said, "Go home." So when I was recovering the following week, I was in a lot of pain, and I was on painkillers. And I said, "I'll draw just to distract myself from the pain." So I found that app, Comic Draw, and I'm always on the Apple Store trying to find. I'm always looking for the app, the amazing app that will do everything for me. It'll draw for you, and it'll just do the panels, and it'll do the like. You
You
just
just have to
basically
think really
talk to
hard,
it. Yeah, it'll do everything. And when I saw the comic draw, I was like, "Wow, this sounds good." So I said, "I'll give it a try." And I downloaded it. There was a free trial, so I tried the free trial. And I started to do a Baguette Robot cartoon, and I was just drawing away, just playing around with the app. And my wife came in to see if I was okay, because it was really quiet. And she said, usually I'm just complaining about the pain,
Right.
And I got really quiet, so she got worried that like something happened.
Right, yeah.
And she saw what I was drawing, and she said, "Oh, did you do that?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Oh, that looks like something that you would see in the newspaper." I was like, "Oh, cool. So I'll post it." So what I did was I posted it to Comic Connect. There's like that social, have you seen that inside the Comic Draw? There's like you can post it to Comic Connect.
We don't
So
draw,
people
so.
can leave comments.
Okay.
So it's like a social thing that's aspect to the app. And that's where Steve B saw it, and he started commenting on my art. And he was really like, his stuff was really positive, and he's very, like the way he would say, like even when there were other people, like he'd be very enthusiastic and very helpful with people. And that's really where they started, the Baguette Robot. So what I used to do was when I used to doodle, the Baguette robot character would just be there. Like, I would just doodle him, but I didn't know where it was. It's just like this robot character that was there, mm-hmm. and was like, I'll do something with it someday. And then I start doing more and more through the Comic Draw app. And then I post them on Instagram, like Facebook, and then Twitter. But I never wanted to do it as a comic book. It was just something to do.
Right.
And it was just something that I always wanted to do. So so then what happened was 9 months later, I got this email from Steve out of the blue. I was going to work, and he was like, they're setting up this company called Artmeric. Would I be interested in doing a comic book? And I was like, oh, yeah, I think so. I've never made a comic book.
Yeah.
I don't know how to make a comic book. So I had to go away and sort of think about, well, how do I make this? How is this going to, you know, it's going to be printed? How many pages? Do I do everything? Do I, you know, get someone to help me? So what I did was I went back and I sort of sat down and tried to figure out what characters to put into the comic book. So it took me like 2 months to sit down and figure out, to do the logo mm-hmm. from scratch, to do like the intro page, then the characters, and then just the formatting, the spelling, like everything. Like, and then I posted it, I think it was November 2018, maybe. I think it was a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It was like the first one I did.
Yeah. Andrew said you were one of the original artists.
Yeah. And it turned out really well. So I was really like, oh, this is fun. Yeah. So then I did the Munch was the next one. So I had to go away and sort of figure out how to put this together. And once I had that worked out, then I could start doing other comic books.
So you do, besides Baguette Robot, what else do you do?
I did an issue of a character called the Munch, which is this robot. He's a nanobot. So basically, all the stories that I do take place inside the head of a giant robot. So, yeah. So basically, the story was that I did a prologue where there was a war, and like the AI rose up, and like these giant robots defended the Earth. And the last robot to survive was this one. And all that was left was his head. And his head was made into a memorial. But over the years, all these like characters and things started to grow inside the head. And so all these little civilizations, because the thing is massive. The thing is like miles wide, the head.
Right.
So there's all like these little pockets of society that grew up. And so like Baguette Robot would be in one section. The Munch will be in another, and then you'll have like Jocko the Bonk, which is like a medieval knight, is in another section, and then there's another character that I did called Vic and Chips, which is like a Victorian character set in like in the Victorian period, but it's inside another section. So all these stories are happening at the same time, but in different parts of the head.
So you had your own multiverse going.
So my own multiverse. I might as well just do it. You know, get it out of the way. Because everybody seems to be doing the multiverse now.
Yeah. Right. You want to be left behind.
Yeah, gotta keep going. Gotta keep up.
So your handle is Philo the Wisp?
Yeah.
How did you come up with that?
So does this... So in Ireland and in England, there's this saying called Willow the Wisp. And in the forest, like when it's between daytime and nighttime, there's twilight,
mm-hmm.
and from what I remember is that there's this light that can appear in the forest, and people call it Will-O-the-Wisp.
Mm.
And it's like, I said, that's a good, because I like puns. So I went Will-O-the-Wisp, and Phil-O-the-Wisp. There's not much of a leap of logic. Oh, Phil-O-the-Wisp, oh yeah, I'll take it. And I checked online, nobody took it.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time I used it was for some. I went to this like farmer's market, and there was like a lady from the opera was there trying to sign people up for a mailing list or something.
Uh-huh.
And she said, and I said, oh, I'll just do it. So she said, what's your email? I said, Philo the Wisp. And she goes, oh, that's really clever. I was like, oh, Philo the Wisp, like Willow the Wisp. And I went, yeah, it is. So yeah, so yeah, so it just seems, it's a bit of fun.
Just curious. So you have 7 issues out, or do you have more?
Yeah, I think I've 15 issues
Wow.
of different comic books
Right.
on Art Merrick. So we beget Robot to 7, but there's also I did a special black and white issue, which I never numbered for some reason. So I just call it a 0 in my head. So there's really there's 8 issues of Beget Robot, but 7 numbered. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
This is where the confusion starts.
And then you have 7 others of the Munch and your other characters.
The Munch, I did one issue. What else did I do? I did this thing called Power Comics. Yeah, I did Power Comics, which was like an anthology. So I wanted to do mixture of cartoony and like a collage. I wanted to do collage comics because, who's doing collage comics at the moment? So there's this app called MixerPiece. I don't know if you've heard of it. And what you do is you get pieces of original art paintings. So it'll be like be the Mona Lisa's eyes, and then there'll be somebody's hand from a different painting, and there'll be a torso. And basically you put all this stuff together. So it's just like it's like a kit. So you just take bits and pieces of artwork and you make something out of it. And I was really fascinated by it. So what I did was I said this would be a great way to make comics. It's really like labor intensive. It takes like 3 days to do a page, but because you're doing everything like piece by piece and you're building it. And that's in Power Comics. So I did a character called Claire, which is like a Celtic warrior. She's like a girl, and she heads off to this place, like the Mysterious Tower is what it's called. And what I did was I did like a 12-page prologue, but it took me like a year to do it. And it was just like, but I want to do that as a graphic novel because when it's printed out, it looks really good. But it's really like it takes a lot of time.
Right.
Yeah. And it's hard, like, because there's no like manuals. So what I do there is so I start off in MixerPiece, and then I bring it into the Comic Draw app, and then I put it together in there as well, and then add in the effects. Add in, if I want to paint over it, and then I do the bubbles and then the layouts and all that stuff. So yeah, it's try and make it as hard as possible.
So you do everything yourself. You're self-contained. You do the.
I do everything. Yeah, I'm just like a one man machine, because I've nobody else. It's just me.
Yeah.
So, and it's hard for me to explain to people like I want to do this, and people are like, I don't know what you're talking about. So
It's
it's just
easier.
easier for me.
Yeah.
Just go and do it. Yeah, just go and do it. Yeah.
So, what are you working on now?
At the moment. Yeah, so I started off the year. I was doing Beget Robot issue 8, so that was my plan for the first 2 months of this year. But what happened was I get distracted when I'm drawing. So what happens is I'll go, okay, I'm going to do Beget Robot, and then I'll be near. I'll have 4 pages left to do, and then I'll get an idea for another comic, and then I'll be like, oh, I'm going to go do this comic,
Yeah, I'll come back to
and
this, yeah.
I'll get really excited about it, and then I'll do that comic, and I'll get like 20 pages done, and then I'll be like, oh, I've got this other idea for another comic. And these tires are going by out there. I was like, I don't know, did you hear that? Did you? Ah, someone yelling. Wow. Say hi to Jane. So I started off doing Beget Robot, and I came up with this. So what I do is I doodle. And a lot of like 90% of my ideas I get is just from doodling on paper or doodling on the iPad. So I drew this character just after Christmas, and I went, this will be a good character for a comic book, because a lot of my stuff is like it's a bit off kilter. So I wanted to do something that was a bit more mainstream, was a bit more accessible to people. So this character is called Fred. And I posted some on Instagram, and it's about this guy who lives like in suburbia, so basically where I am. So it's
Right.
like he's in this area, but I don't say it's this area, and it's just basically stuff that happens to him. But I wanted to do the comic like in real time, so at the end of the year you'd like have a section that's January, February, March. So it'd be broken up into 12 sections. Because I found that when I'm doing comic books, like if I'm trying to do stuff for a Christmas issue, like with Baguette Robot and stuff, I always get the ideas on the 26th of December. So it's, or like an Easter, I'll always get it the day after Easter.
Right.
Or St. Patrick's, it's always the day. So I'm like, I really need to sit down and do it like as it's happening. So just before the holiday.
Right.
So that's what I've been doing with the Fred character. So I got distracted with him. So, and then while I was doing Fred, I said I wanted to do an animal, like a pet. He needs to have a pet. And I really didn't want to do cats or dogs because they've been done. Like, you know, you have Snoopy and Peanuts. You've got like Garfield. You have the Mutts characters. But I came up with this idea for a dog. I said, I'll just do the dog. And the gist of it is it's just a normal dog. And then there's an earthquake and the fishbowl hits him on the head. And the bowl gets stuck on his head.
Okay.
So the water drains out and the fish gets out, but it's stuck on his head. So the dog thinks he's like the space hero with the Captain Kirk character.
Yeah, right.
So this is his helmet. So Fred takes him to the vet and they just can't get this helmet off, like not the helmet, the goldfish bowl off. So, and he's like, well, will he survive? Like, will he breathe? How am I going to feed him? And the vet's like, well, just blend food for the moment and give him a stick and suck it up through a straw, you know? And so then the dog thinks it's a protein pack, you know? So then it's like, so what happens is in the story is that it starts off where, like, you know, there's a picture of space dog in a spaceship and he's traveling through the universe. And he's like, just, you know, he's like, you know, I'm out looking for adventure. And it turns out that he's like, he's in a recycling bin. At the end, that's the punchline. So he thinks in his head he's out traveling the universe.
Right.
But in reality, he's in the recycling bin, like, you know, growling and, you know, he's causing a nuisance in the neighborhood. And so that's like the gist of it. And then there's another one where he is, like he's floating in space and he's like, actually he's in the water. So he's on a water planet. And then he's like, he's starting to panic because he needs to find land. But it turns out he's just like floating around in the lagoon.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's found peace. So he's just seeing, like, just floating on the lagoon, like, you know, meditating.
Uh-huh.
And then Fred is looking at him going, what is this dog doing?
Yeah.
So it's actually a lot funnier in the pitch than the way I'm describing it.
It sounds a little bit like kind of like Snoopy and his imagination, you know, World War One fighter and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's like that. So it's very, yeah, it is. It's like that. So I think that's the most mainstream thing I've done where people can go, okay, this is... I get this.
So are you posting that somewhere now?
No. I actually did post one for Valentine's Day. But you don't see his face. The joke was he was on a nice planet and his helmet had fogged up.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to send this important message to people. And then he wrote, I'll have to use my nose. So he writes Happy Valentine's Day on the helmet,
right.
And or the goldfish bowl, and then says Happy Valentine's Day to you, and that's like the strip. So it's like it's simple, but the idea with that is I want to do that as a hardback book, so there's two strips per page, so it's going to be like landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a landscape book, color in the front, color in the back, and then but all the strips are black and white. So what I found was that I can draw really quick. I can draw very fast in black and white. And if I have to color, like takes me twice as long. Like all the Baguette Robot stuff, I can knock that out really fast. But when I have to, and I sometimes dread having to color the stuff because people like it in color. So I was like, I have to sit down and I've got to color this thing in. And I'm like, I'd rather be off drawing more cartoons and somebody else can color it in. So the space dog will be hopefully published on Art Merrick because I have to talk to him about I want to do something weird with the layout of the book.
Right.
And then Fred, I want to do Fred. And then I came up with an idea for a magazine. So when I was working on space dog, I did this other doodle and I'm like, oh my God, this is a great idea for a magazine. So I'm like, oh, I need to figure out how to do this. So I want to do like, like it's a glossy magazine. But I don't know what's so, I want to talk to Art America as well to see how big I can make it, because all my comics are like they're the US. I want to make it bigger, so it's like a magazine, and that'll be a mix of strips. Like I have strips that I don't really know where to put them. They don't really fit in Baguette Robot, and they don't really fit, like they're just odd. So I just sort of just put them in this magazine with some text pieces and some short stories, and just see if that works. I don't know.
Wow.
So it's just all experimentation. Just throw it out there and see what happens.
So how long does it take you to do a strip or a
Let's see. So it'll probably take me 2 hours to do a black and white strip. So my work schedule is that I have a full-time job. So what I do, the only time I can work is like between 10 and midnight. So I try and get the work done between that. But in the weekend as well, like Saturday morning, I'll wake up and I'll just start drawing. But normally it'll take me 2 hours to do like a four panel strip.
And you're at your best at midnight, right? So
You know,
that's
yeah, it's, believe it or not, like when before COVID, when I used to have to commute, I used to have to get up at 5:30 in the morning.
I used to do the same.
And on Sunday night at 10 o'clock, when I should be getting ready for bed, my brain would start slowly going, oh, this is a good idea for a comic strip. And then I'd be like, well, why don't you make this comic strip? And then why don't you do this? And then my brain would start waking up. So a lot of times was 10 o'clock on a Sunday was when my brain would say, you're not going to bed, you're staying up. And I would stay up till like after midnight just writing or drawing strips. It's weird.
You're fresh and ready to go on Monday morning at
Oh, Monday
5:30.
morning was horrible. Yeah, I was just like, no, it was not good.
So you're staying at home during the COVID.
Yeah.
I don't miss the commute.
Neither do I. That's it's amazing how much time is wasted just trying to get
It's
places.
like a whole other day of the week to just go
Yeah.
back and forth to work, so
There is.
I don't miss having to iron a shirt, and I don't miss the commute. It's great. I mean,
That's
I'm
right.
sorry we have COVID going on, but personally, it's working out.
Yeah, it's been well, it's
More
been good
time.
for me. Yeah.
So who is the ideal reader for your comic books?
That's a good question because I've always struggled with who should like who like age wise, because I remember, I think it was Steve, and he was saying this will be great for kids. I think it was a Smart Aleck. I did this other strip called Smart Aleck. It's about the smart light bulb, and I deliberately, it's text heavy, and it's only 4 panels, but there's a lot of dialogue in there, and I always remember. Alan Moore gave an interview years ago saying that if you have 22 more words or more in the speech bubble, you're doing it wrong. Mine have like 30, sometimes like 40. It's a lot. And I'm always like, God, this is like, I don't know what I should be doing this. And the last Smart Aleck I did was, I think it was a Robin Hood. But my, so when I did the comic books like Baguette Robot, my wife and daughter will go through it because I get very close to the artwork and I get very close to the text. And sometimes I'll make spelling mistakes and then I don't catch it. And they'll flick through it. Like they'll go through like the I put it on Art Merrick and then you can sort of go through it. You can flip it. And I remember my daughter got to Smart Aleck. She went, I'm not reading that. And I said, why? She said, there's too much text. I'm not reading that. And I'm like, it's only a page. She's like, nope, I'm not reading it. So I think I'm very conscious when I'm doing, so for Baguette Robot, I think I'm trying to be cautious of kids. So if kids are reading the strip, I have to make sure that it's, well, it's silly anyway, but I just want to make sure that it's, especially now, it's very easy to offend people. So it's like I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want any, especially a kid. If somebody reads and like the parent like goes mad. But touch wood, there's it's been okay. But I think there it's all ages.
Okay.
Because even when they go into Art America and you have to put in the age group, I'm like, I think it's all ages, because I
Yeah.
don't think it's just nonsense. So I don't think anybody's going to get offended.
So the ideal reader is anybody that can read, basically.
Basically,
Yeah.
yeah, except for the smart aleck, there's too much text. It's, you know, just
People that
cram it
like
down
to
a bit.
read with like smart aleck.
Yeah.
So how are you connecting with these, your ideal reader?
You know, it's, I sometimes I get feedback. So the, you know, I get feedback through Instagram. I think that's, and maybe on Facebook. And I'll get like, I did this Fred strip recently where he was, it was based on me. So it's a five panel strip, it's a page, it's five panels. And it's Fred driving a car and his girlfriend is beside him. And he's basically criticizing all the other drivers. So he's like, I can't believe that guy ran a red light. Can't believe that guy's going the wrong way down a one-way street. And then his girlfriend says, oh, you know, you're driving with the handbrake on. And that happened to me one time because I'm terrible. When I'm driving, I'm just like, people drive me mad when they're driving because I, you know, you're driving and you think you're great. And they're like, you know, you pick all, you see all these people doing crazy things on the road.
Right.
And you're like, man, what a fool. How did they get their license? And then I was driving home with my handbrake on. I'm like, oh my God. I'm just as bad as them. So, but when I posted the strip, somebody said a comment about, oh, somebody learning to drive. And sometimes that happens where I'll post something and somebody will pick up something completely different that I didn't even think about. And so that does happen. But I mean, overall, I get positive. Not many people respond. They just, you know, I get the like, the like, the like, the like. The Fred strip that I posted at the car, I posted like I was really tired. It was after midnight one night. And I said, I'll just get, I should have left it till the morning. And I said, I'll just post it. And what happened was I spent a lot of time with the speech bubbles. I spent a long time like the dialogue. Like I'll draw the thing really quickly, but then when I have to do the dialogue, it takes me a while to sort of get it to flow. And what happened was, as soon as I posted it, somebody's sent a message saying, "Oh, there's a word missing on panel five." I'm like, "What?" So I had to go back in, and I'm looking at her going, "There's no word missing on panel five." So I went and made a cup of coffee, and I came back, and I read it again, and there was a word missing, but I had been so close to it
Yeah.
that I didn't even notice, and that does happen. But yeah, I mean, it's I don't really get that much feedback, so I'm not really sure
Yeah.
if people like the stuff. I just churn her out, and then yeah, there's no like I think like with stand up, to get instant, you know if it's funny or not. When you publish something, it's just like I've written it. Like so, when I write stuff, by the time I get it to Art Merrick, and by the time it's printed, I mean it could be like 4 or 5 months old, so I don't even know if it's still funny. By that time, I've moved on. But I
Right.
don't. I just put it out. But there's no feedback to my stuff, so I don't know if people like it or not. You know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we understand that.
Yeah, it's weird.
You're on Instagram, you're on Facebook. I'm
I'm
just
everywhere. No.
okay. So everywhere being
I'm
Twitter
on.
and Reddit
I'm with
and
the old people are on Facebook. So the old people on Facebook. Instagram seems to be the. It's a good one. Twitter. And I post sometimes on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Tumblr's a bit, you know.
Yeah, we post it too.
But I don't post on what's that one? There's a couple of other art ones that I should really post, but I never. I just sort of automatically just go to the four: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. Yeah. Do you post on other sites?
Well, we're available on Comixology.
Okay.
We also are on Indie Planet, which is Kablam's. Their, their sell platform. They have a print and digital, and we're also available since we're advertising. We're also on Kindle if anybody wants to read it that way, and then we do it through Artith Merrick. We try to have them
So
all
which
come out at the same time.
I think to which do you have like do you get feedback from Comixology?
No,
Do no.
we get
It's
feedback
just the
from we put it out there, and
I know. It's like sending into the void. It's just, you don't know.
Yeah. Well, I
just
always
goes.
I look at Comixology as sort of like being on Netflix, and nobody knows you're there, but you're out there, and if they find you, great. But
yeah, I think you're right.
I think they stop at the A's and whatever is the Marvel DC thing, and that's about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's
we're on page 35 of what's new this week, kind of a deal.
Oh yeah. You got to dig deep.
Yeah. So are you only available on Artith Merrick?
At the moment, yeah.
You're loyal.
Well, I don't know if it's laziness or just... Because it's like, it took me a long time to... Like, even doing Artith Merrick is like, it's exhausting. Like, I have to start from scratch again, put everything together, and then send her out. And then it sort of just goes off into the void. Mm-hmm. And then I'll see it on the website, and then and that's it. I'm moving on to the next one. So I was thinking about doing, I spoke to somebody about Comixology. They were saying that they put stuff on Comixology, and they said they didn't get much from it. So I'm like, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. I at Comic-Con, somebody was talking about, they were on Comixology, and they go, you know, nobody who's on Comixology makes any money, but Comixology seems to make money. So, because they get half of, you know, they get half of whatever you earn, and they're nobody. You might make a dollar, but they make 50 cents times a million, so they're doing okay. So,
yeah. But I think that's always been the way. Like, the creative people do all the hard work, and then like people come along and go, "Hey, let me sell this for you."
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Yeah. We've been on Comixology from the beginning. Actually, we started there. And they were actually, we got to know Chip, who's one of the guys there. And he was very supportive in the beginning, I'll say. We sent him our first couple of issues to look at, and he came back with feedback. And so we made changes based on, like, we got a new colorist based on his feedback. And so that kind of opened us up to, we're just the writers. We don't do the artwork. We have to pay people to do that and to color it. And, my other son, Trevor, who is also one of the co-creators, is the letterer on it. So, so we have this little process. It's, you know, we do like eight pages a month of art, because I have to pay for it all. So, you know, I have to kind of manage it that way. And he kind of said, you need to get a new artist. So he actually helped us find a new artist by hooking us up with the Savannah College of Art and Design. And we actually found our colorist was a friend of one of the people that was recommended to us. Kind of that's how it worked out. And then we've also, our current artist is from SCAD. So it's been kind of a good thing for us, I think.
Yeah.
But we write something, and it's a long time before it actually gets done. And then it's a longer time we finished, 16 issues, and we've only printed 10 of them. So we're kind of, trying to put them out slowly and try to figure out maybe if we could get people to notice we're there before we start putting them all out. So,
yeah. And what's the time when you send it to Comixology? What's the time before it gets published? Is it quick or is it just slow?
Once they accept it, it's about a month, and they give you like, it's going to be up tomorrow. Hope you know that kind of. It's very. They tell you they've accepted it, and they'll let you know when it's going to go up. And it's usually like the Monday it goes up on a Wednesday, so it's not a whole lot of time to. As I say, we try to have everything go out at the same time on all the platforms. And so we have to like coordinate with, so we need to put it up this date and put it up this date. And actually, as it turned out, the last issue, we decided to just, we're not going to wait for Comixology. We're just going to put it up. And then they actually put it out the same day we were putting it up anyway. So it worked out.
Yeah.
But we were trying desperately to take advantage of the Artith Merrick sale at the end. And I don't think we made a nickel on that, but. We were trying to make sure we had everything out so that we could be part of that. And, well, as I say,
it's a tough.
We didn't get rich off of it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's a tough business. I mean, it's not something you want to do to make money. Believe me, like it's if you're in there for the money, it's a tough game.
I'd like it to at least be sustainable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's still a hurdle to get over for us.
Big time.
So do you have any merch?
Oh yeah. So I forgot. Like I think it's been a while since I checked, but I have a few t-shirts on Artmeric. I think the Get Robot. I think I have a Smart Alec. I have a character called the Girl with the Talking Hair. She's up there. And the cover of Power Comics, Claire, she's up there as well.
Huh.
And I think of a print called the, when the first started, I put up prints as well.
Right.
I don't know if they're, The Queen Listens, I think it's called. It's a collage character. And she reminds me of like a female Doctor Who. But yeah, it's, yeah, a few things, but that's about it. I mean, I haven't posted. It's mostly comic books.
Right.
On there.
So have you done any conventions or signings or anything?
No, I don't think they let me in.
if you pay for the table, they'll let you in, trust me.
Oh, they'll let you in. Of course. It's always the money. Yeah. I think the first year I came to America, I was in San Diego the weekend of the Comic-Con, and I didn't realize it was Comic-Con.
Right.
And I've always wanted to go. And it was like a couple of blocks away. And I couldn't figure out why it was so busy in San Diego. And it wasn't until later when I left that I realized, oh, Comic-Con was on.
Yeah.
So like 4 blocks away. And I completely missed it. I'm like, oh. I went to one in San Francisco, probably 2011, I think it was the last time. But I've never been... as an artist, I've always gone as someone just buying stuff and looking around.
Yeah, we've been going to Comic-Con for, I don't know, over like 12 years or something.
Wow.
We missed 1 year, but you used to be able to go up and buy a ticket that day for the show. I mean, now you can't do that anymore. But a little tip is, since you're actually printing comic books, you could be a professional and get in for free.
Oh, wow.
You still have to pay for hotel and travel and all
of course.
That.
But yes.
The Comic-Con part of itself would be free.
Well, that's great.
You have to apply for that, but it's a little little benefit we get from publishing something. So
that's good.
I'll pass that on to you.
Thank you. Because I've like zero knowledge of, conventions and stuff. I just basically, I'm in the bubble here.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even know how to start like going to conventions.
I've been trying to talk to Artith Merrick about getting a booth.
I think, weren't they supposed to go last year? I think they were saying they were planning to go 2020, but then COVID came.
No.
And they want to have they should go.
Well, I think they want to do something in London, since that's where they are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was sending them information about Comic-Con in San Diego. Here's how much a booth would be, and here's the deadline, and da-da-da. They never like, oh, yeah, that's great, thanks.
Oh, that's pity, because I think if you're going to go, I think you should just go to Comic-Con. I mean, that's the biggest one.
Yeah. And it would be good. And I figured then the artist could be, at the booth. And, but...
Yeah. I'd make the trip down for that.
So what is your ultimate goal for your drawings? Do you study animation? Do you want to have animated?
Maybe down the road. So the thing with me is, with animation, is that When I went to art college, they were doing the Disney way of animation, and I don't like the Disney way of animation. I'm more like experimental stuff. So when I was growing up in Ireland in the 70s, on the television they'd have like animation from all over the world. So you would get like Czechoslovakian animation, you get Polish animation, Russian animation,
mm-hmm.
Canadian animation. So I got to see all this. Really, really interesting. Some really good, like somebody was doing animation on stained glass. Hmm. Some was on felt. Some was just like splodges of paint with jazz music. And you're looking at it like a six-year-old going, what the hell is this? But I like it. I don't know what it is, but I like it. And that's the animation I like. It's like something that's slightly a bit off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
if I was going to do animation of with the characters, I think probably Baguette Robot would be easy to do. But I'd be very interested in doing the Claire character because that collage style, I don't think I've seen it being done like in the last 30 or 40 years. So that would be very like distinctive to look at. But then again, like the guy who came up with the app, the MixerPiece app, I'm sure he has a copyright on that, so I don't even know how that would work. But long story short, you know, I could do it in Procreate myself, but I'm just too lazy, to be honest. Because I can do with the latest update with Procreate, you can do animation. And the thing with me is like I'll start off and I'll do like, you know, they'll do the first frame, and then I'll do the last frame. I'm like, oh my God, it's gonna take forever. Oh my God, I know, I'm not gonna do this. Let me just like, get some cutouts or something and just videotape it in live action, you know, just live in real time. The easiest way possible. But you know, I think I did toy with the idea of doing like an animated Baguette Robot, like a Christmas card. And it's like another one of those things where it will hit me on the 26th of December. I should have done this like in October, and I forget about it, and then I'm like, yeah. So maybe someday, but Baguette Robot definitely. But you know what? Actually, what would be a good one would be Smart Alec, because it's just a light bulb. The only thing that would move is his mouth, so that'd be very easy to do. And then because it's so dialogue heavy, it probably actually that would probably work better as animation. So thanks for
Okay. Again,
that.
if it goes anywhere, we're producers on the show.
That's right. I'll give you the credit.
Where would people, if they're interested, where would they find out more about you and your books?
So I think the best place to go would be Instagram. So I fill out a wisp, and then I have another one. So on fill out a wisp, I have a link in the bio to my stuff on Artmeric. So that's probably the quickest way to get to there. And that's it, really. I mean, that's probably the best Instagram.
Okay. Well, I just want to let people have a.
Oh yeah.
All right. So thanks for being on the show.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me.
If you're watching this on YouTube and you like this, leave a like, subscribe if you want to see more, and ring the notification bell if you want to see exactly when these go up.
So until next week, I'm David Hankins.
I'm Paul Hankins.
And you've been on the air with Power Squared.